Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
There was a special meeting had yesterday by the New Orleans City Council relative to transparency during the Hurricane Francine event. And joining us to talk about it, JP Morrell, New Orleans City Council member at large. JP, welcome to the show.
Thanks. No, thanks for having me.
JP, I know that there were a number of concerns articulated in the immediate aftermath of the storm that you guys wanted to get to the bottom of, and yesterday's meeting was about that. What were the results?
Well, I mean, I think we were able to really give some needed direction to the Office of Homeland Security. Colin's been really great there. NOLA Ready, over 300,000 people subscribed to it. There needs to be a single point of contact to disseminate all information, whether it be massive energy issues, whether it be pumps going out, whether it be sewer challenges. There needs to be a central point of information. That information needs to be flowing very freely and very quickly. And to Colin's credit, Colin Arnold's over at Homeland Security, he said that's something that they can do. And that was really the first step. The second thing was really drilling in with energy as far as what their assessment process is and how they're assessing damage effects, getting powers on. We also got a lot of information from businesses in particular who had not lost power during the event, but then without notice had their power cut off to do additional repairs and had lengthy delays getting power back on in that repair period with no communication. And as you know, NOLA is a business. If you come in the day after a flood hurricane event and you open up ready to go, and without notice, your power gets cut off for 24 hours, that's devastating. And we had a testimony from an individual with a cupcake shop on Bayou Road who literally went from thinking she could get back in to sell product to losing power after she had power and having to throw product away. And that's not acceptable, and energy has to do better. Sewage and Water Board, I mean, they had a lot of challenges. Once again, similar to the Mylar balloon fiasco, they struggled to communicate to the public and the council with those challenges, and we're over that. And we told them that at this point, we've given you all – I think everyone's grace has run out. If things are happening in real time, you could tell people. We really kind of pointed to Cynthia Lee Sheng and Jefferson Parish as the gold standard. When the pumps in Jefferson were having issues, she just told people that. And I said that we are a population of adults. You have to give us information in real time to make adult decisions. You're not our parents who need to withhold information from us because it's in our best interest. You don't have that authority. You don't have that right. And they say they heard the message loud and clear, but I'm working with Councilmember DeRusso. We're going to tighten up language and make sure that they do submit information to the proper authorities, to the public, as quickly as possible.
And I don't remember who said this, but I was listening to part of the meeting. Someone was having difficulty in understanding the benefit to the public of providing this information real time. Do you recall that conversation?
It was actually the head of Homeland Security, Colin Arnold, said that we don't know what the benefit is of telling them that pump X is out. And Joe DeRusso completely lost his mind, and rightfully so, when that comment was made.
Well, I just make the following observation, right? I mean, we started getting texts at WWL Radio, Tommy Tucker and I, about water rising in certain neighborhoods. I want to say it was at Carrollton and something. I can't remember the cross street. And then the television news obviously sent somebody out there, and we started seeing the water rise, right? Well, had that information been put out on NOLA Ready or otherwise, people could have moved their cars. I mean, you know, you're talking about $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 investments that are made, you know, they could have taken some evasive action if they heard, well, the pump, and this is the area that we think is going to be impacted first, because we actually know that. They know that, right? That
right.
When a pumping station goes
to
out,
point,
that this is the lowest lying area, we know what's going to happen. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. And to your point, Councilman Druso said exactly that. He said that when the water was rising in Lakeview, he had his council car there, and he said that had they told me that the pumps were malfunctioning, that's a city asset. That is a city vehicle that if it gets destroyed, that's city property. He goes, I would have moved it up further on my driveway or on my lawn, because that's what you do when you have the information. When you have the information, you make smart decisions. When you withhold the information because you don't want to cause panic, well, it doesn't make the water go down. And Newell, just like everyone in the city has a lot of historic knowledge of their own experiences with hurricanes, they know which areas are prone to flooding. They know what the challenges are. If you give them the information, you just have to give them the ability to go ahead and make those smart decisions for themselves.
I wonder, JP, and I don't know how it works in Orleans, but it would seem to me that if we had an adequately sized, and y'all may have one, emergency operations center, that, you know, you are granting right-of-ways and franchise agreements for city-owned property to any number of the utilities, that there's a requirement, and we put the infrastructure in place, whether it be fiber, level of redundancy with microwave, whatever it takes, to be able to be co-located in one area where we have access to everybody's systems as to where the whole picture, you know, that's being painted by the challenge of a storm is revealing itself real time. Because unless and until we get to that point, this continues to be a communication breakdown system, right? I mean, even through our best efforts.
We have that. There is a central operational hub with Homeland Security. Honestly, the real benefit, I mean, the crime camera situation we had for years was a bust, but the real-time crime cameras that aren't great, the older ones that Nagin put in that aren't great for crime, they actually do a really good job of monitoring intersections during events. So, I mean, there is a whole centralized hub, a centralized command center.
This but all the utilities are hooked up to their systems from there. They can
Entergy has people in the room with communication, so does your water board. Newell, this was really an issue of operational paralysis. It wasn't a lack of information. It was a lack of information. It was a too many chefs in the kitchen. No one was let's be very clear, because you and I are always very candid. In an ideal situation, you would have a mayor's comms team who would have handled this. But this is not an ideal situation. There was not a singular point of contact where a person was updating in real time. I'll give you an example, because you know this from Jefferson Parish. We got briefed as a council when about 30 minutes before the public got briefed once per day, including when the hurricane landed. I know from my time as a legislator, that is not acceptable. Even as legislators at a higher level, we were getting briefings on weather and developments every 3 to 5 hours. And one of the things that came up in the meeting yesterday was, why are you holding all information till the briefing once a day? If during that 24-hour period of the hurricane, the 48-hour period, even go wider out, you have information coming out in real time that can help people make decisions in real time. If you know a pump has gone out 1 hour after the briefing, don't brief us the next day that the pump went out. Do it in real time. And really, even with the information in hand, now, part of the pushback we got was, well, we don't want to tell you there's a problem without a solution. Well, that is an asinine position to take. Because, one,
what?
If you're only going to report bad things when you've got a solution. If you have a sewer lift plant go out, what you're going to tell us it went out 2 weeks later? Like, no, you tell us when the problem happened. I mean, what people don't get in government sometimes is sometimes it's enough to say we've identified a problem and we're working on it. That actually gives more comfort than, I don't know why the water at my street's going down. If people knew, for example, a pump went out, and that there were teams on site repairing the pump to get it back in service, then the water rising on your lawn, you're actually less scared because you know there's a plan. If the water is just rising and, for example, like you guys, other folk can't get information why it's rising, then your imagination takes over. And if you know historically that your area that floods in low-lying times, that there is 7 inches of rain happening in a very short period of time, your mind starts going to the absolute worst-case scenario, and you don't have any information to tell you different. And, I mean, I'm not saying we had some worst-case scenarios in the city. I mean, there were some pretty significant flooding, power outages, especially to the longer ones in the Carrollton and Gentilly area, were unacceptable. One of the big issues, Newell, and this is something like you find in these situations, in New Orleans, the setback for trimming trees is 4 feet. In every other parish, it's 8. And it's something that the Parks and Parkways negotiates with Energy. And in the parts of the city where power did not get back till the end, and that's the Carrollton Gentilly area, it was because of foliage and trees falling on lines.
You don't have to preach to me about that.
So the point we made is we're going to go direct Park and Parkways to say we're going to make it 8 feet like everybody else. Now, some people were like, we need to bury the power lines. One, even if you want to bury the power lines, let's say we want to go there, that's a multi-year, like 5-10 year process. It's billions of dollars. It doesn't make sense to not cut the trees because you want to bury the power line someday. You cut the trees back now, and in the future, hopefully we bury the power lines. But right now, it's about making sure in the time we have today, throughout this season and future seasons, we may have to trim that oak tree back an extra 4 feet to make sure your neighbors have power. And I mean, for those people that kind of view the oak tree over the power of their neighborhoods, I'll take your hate mail. It's fine. But when you look at people in Carrollton and Gentilly who had power one day later, actually sometimes 2 days later than everybody else, it was directly because of foliage and power lines, because of the wind. Sure.
Absolutely. And we should, by ordinance or otherwise, not allow people to plant trees under utility right-of-ways.
That's another good idea.
You know, I mean, we're still planting trees between the sidewalk and the street. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you know, and we plant trees that grow to 30, 40 feet in height. It's crazy. But, you know, you made an observation, and there's something about organizational culture with what I call information hoarders, right? They believe that they gain more authority, more control, and otherwise, and it runs violative of transparency. Information hoarders are the single most disruptive force to an organizational culture. And unless and until during the course of an event that there's a complete understanding and willingness of all the partners to put out the most current and relevant information, real time, and eliminate information hoarders. And guess what? I guarantee you, if you had private conversations with the top 35, 40 people that are in that EOC, they're going to tell you who the information hoarder is because they've been equally frustrated by that individual. And the reason you're not getting more updates is they don't want y'all to reveal it to the media and to put it out there. They want to control the flow, but they have a whole different ideology as to what the public has the right to know and when. And until that gets resolved, you're going to continue to have these problems. It doesn't matter how many meetings you have. It requires a knockdown, drag-out, private conversation where this ultimately gets resolved once and for all. And those information hoarders have to be removed. They're not healthy to an organization, never will be healthy to an organization. Your thoughts?
I agree. One of the things I talked about with all the different departments we had yesterday was there needs to be a policy position that we do not have. Because what happens basically is that you have people in the administration that get information in real time, and they disseminate it to everyone else at the once-a-day briefing. My position is there needs to be a policy that survives administrations, that this is the playbook during events, and that these are the briefings that happen, this is the timeline that happened, and I said, really, if you look at what happens to other parishes, council members really become surrogates because you really can't have the mayor or parish president everywhere. And when everyone right. has the same information and they're operating off the same information, and let's say you are someone trying to get in contact with Sewage and Water Board and they can't be reached, but the council person, let's say Joe, knows all the information, then the information gets out. That shouldn't be seen as a liability. It's an asset. If everyone has all the information and can speak to it at all times, everyone knows what's going on. And kind of what you saw is you saw a lot of council members giving information out kind of haphazardly as they got it, because they got it haphazardly. And that's not their fault in particular. It's because they were given it in kind of like these weird silos where you get information from one department but not another. And you kind of had to almost Nancy Drew Scooby-Doo it yourself to figure out what the hell the picture was, because you weren't given a clear view of the whole picture. But, I mean, I think the big issue, and that's why I told people at the meeting yesterday it's not over, is we really got a lot of information from departments. We have a lot of comments to go through, a lot of online comments that we're given, a lot of experiences, and we're going to have to establish and change policy going forward in a way that's not discretionary.
No, you're right. And as I said, that may take a backroom, knockdown, drag-out debate over this issue, because I've seen this, and people will tell you, I set out and eliminated information hoarders. In fact, I made the mistake once of doing a workaround in my organization, and I quickly recognized, you, Newell Norman, are a dumbass. This is not the way to approach this problem. You need to eliminate the persons that are causing these problems. And the sooner you do that, the better off the organization as a whole is going to be. And that's what I set out to do. And it made all the difference in the world. I mean, you know, because when the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, that organization cannot grow in a healthy fashion ever, right? And it perpetuates itself. And it's when you reach these defining moments and you say, okay, that no more, not doing it. And I guarantee you there are, if y'all survey your folks, you're going to find all kinds of workarounds. they're just not healthy, and they're uncertain. It creates a level of uncertainty that becomes really difficult to manage, especially in the heat of the moment of an event that's throwing nothing but curveballs to you. When you think about a hurricane, right, JP? I mean, it's like going up in the batter's box and you're up against the person in the entire universe that has the best curveball ever, Mother Nature. No one's figured out the curveballs that she can deliver moment by moment.
You're 100% right. And I mean, it's why it's so crucial, and in instances where it works, it's why having everyone operating as a team at the same time is so critical, because you're dealing with an entity, a force of nature, where you can't predict anything.
Yeah, and the only thing that you're certain of is your limitations, because we know going in
exactly
what the
correct.
Limitations of the system are, right? I mean, how well do we know that, right? So, I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting. Look, this is not unique to New Orleans. This is every organization across the country. There are days where you're going to conduct oneself in an exemplary fashion. You're just going to hit it on every point of that event. And there are other events where you're just going to miss it. And you're going to miss it, and it's typically going to be one, two, or three different individuals that are not following the sheet of music that's been established, which is your SOP, your policy, whatever you want to refer to it as. They've deviated. And the moment they deviate, the whole house of cards and the dominoes start to fall, figuratively speaking, you know, and then you have a problem. It'll be. I don't envy y'all, because it is one of the most frustrating things in management, and it can't. Where you don't want it to reveal itself is during the event of a storm, right?
Well, and just remember the extra hurdle, which is that we control the budget, but we don't manage all the partners. And so, right. what's really frustrating, and you know this obviously, is that like the last thing we want to do is to have to use ordinances to make policy. But I'll tell you one thing I've learned in my time, my term as a council person, is it's sometimes safer to legislate common sense just so you make sure that everyone's on the same page, which hopefully we can work it out without doing that, but it's always on the table.
Yeah. You got to laugh to keep from crying sometimes. I mean, but
you're
anyway,
right.
JP, thank
true.
You. Best of luck with this endeavor. Thanks. For certain, and really appreciate you coming on and talking about this. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks, Noel.
All right, that's JP Morrell, New Orleans City Council member at large. We will be right back. We'll go to the talk lines. Thoughts about all of this. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
There's a bunch of breaking news. Deputy involved shooting in Marrero. Sheriff Joe Lapinto is headed to the scene, and we'll be providing details here shortly, according to news reports. Also, really interesting situation going on in Lebanon relative to Hezbollah. At least 8 people were killed and about 2,800 people injured on today. The issue was described, or the event was described, as the biggest security breach that Hezbollah has suffered since the start of the Israel-Gaza war nearly a year ago, according to Reuters. The Shiite terror group claimed that lithium batteries inside the pagers apparently detonated, and some members allegedly felt the pagers heating up before abandoning them, according to an unnamed Hezbollah official that spoke to the Wall Street Journal. Hezbollah officials are speculating that Israeli malware could be behind the infiltration. Hezbollah members in Syria also injured by similar pager detonations around Damascus. And this signals, they say, a coordinated effort to reach the group in multiple locations across different countries. Again, Hezbollah has blamed Israel for the attack, while the Israeli military has declined to comment. And obviously, this could potentially lead to escalation. Hezbollah had moved to pagers. We talked about this before, because the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, had infiltrated their cellular phone systems, and they obviously were listening to communications amongst the multitude of members in order to more adequately protect themselves and to gain intelligence. And if it is that attributed to the IDF, I mean, it sends a signal of nowhere to run, nowhere to hide with the explosion of these pagers, and that there's no communication system that they're going to set up, that there's that it's not going to be infiltrated by the intelligence community. Very interesting. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. I got a lot of comments, again, about the conversation that we had earlier when we're talking about character. And I was my monologue was really about the character of the mainstream media. And it's amazing how, you know, they went to lengths to fact check one candidate, but not necessarily the other candidate. And one has to ask why. You know, the media should be unbiased. They really shouldn't be behind one candidate or the other. If they are a true news reporting agency, they report the news. And they're not just one-sided in what they do. And when you go back and you conduct an audit of what's said and done, you see it. It reveals itself in a very apparent way of what's going on. This is not in defense of Trump. Actually, it's more in defense of conservative values. Because the reality is they're not aligning with conservative values and Republican conservatism at all. And it's not really linked to one ideology, an ideological bent on a particular issue. It's just across the board. And it just doesn't make any sense. I hearken back to the days in the 60s and 70s where, you know, you had true reporters that were reporting whether or not it was good news, bad news, indifferent news, or otherwise, and not really depending on whether or not there was an R or a D or an I. There was always favoritism. I get it. I understand. It's human nature. You kind of align to those that have the same ideological bent as you do. I understand it. But there were more that were actually able to separate themselves. Today, there are very few. And we wonder why we have the vitriol. We wonder why we have this stream of conscious hate running through society today on so many different fronts. We cannot talk about issues and be just blatantly honest about what it actually means to our society, what it means to our communities, what it means to our infrastructure, our ability to provide adequate health care for folks, our ability to educate our kids, whether or not something going on at the southern border is taxing these systems. We can't have these honest conversations because we're all xenophobe, racist individuals, and this violates the very being of the United States of America, and the fact that we were built, you know, on the strength of immigration. Well, yeah. No one denies that immigration was an integral part of American history and served us well. And no one denies that we are a nation of immigrants. No one has ever denied that. But why is it that as we have become a more complex society and the need for the growth patterns in this country have changed from the early parts of in the early 1900s, moving through the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s, and the 50s, and that today it's a different challenge? Because today, you know, as our growth is not nearly as significant as it was through those years, and we don't have the infrastructure to be able to meet the needs. When we drop the number of immigrants in a community, whether legal or otherwise, that matches the numbers of the population of the community. Think about this. You have a community. It's set up to be able to service the population. And then in a short period of time, 18 to 24 months, you've doubled the size of the community in population. And there are places in this country where that has happened. And now, citizens can't get a doctor's appointment, aren't getting adequate treatment in the ER. Their class sizes have moved from 22 to every teacher to 65 in some cases. And they're chastised for complaining about it. And this administration, selectively working with NGOs, non-governmental organizations, not-for-profits, that had set up refugee programs, a Catholic Church being one of them. You recall not too many years ago, there was a big issue in Baton Rouge about this. It kind of blew up. Nobody knew what was going on. There was an overrepresentation of folks being brought in from a particular country. I don't even remember the country. At this point in time, it doesn't really matter. But everything was being taxed. The whole infrastructure. And people were complaining. Because they've been giving up their hard-earned dollars for a long time in taxes and otherwise. And there were certain expectations that they had as to what government was going to be in a position to be able to deliver to them. And all of a sudden, they saw that compromise in a very short period of time. And then they were made to feel embarrassed or ashamed, or that they weren't capable of exhibiting empathy or sympathy to the plight of others. And my response to all of that is, no, that's the whole purpose of an immigration policy system, is to be the smoothing coefficient across the country to make sure that our growth is done in an ordered and structured way, is just one example. And you could take this same argument and apply it to almost any of these policy decisions. Energy, for example, same thing. You want it conducted in an ordered and structured way to be able to meet the expectations of the public and the costs that they have to pay for energy. Who do we have, Coleman? Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Noel. You were speaking just a little while ago about the media and, you know, that it's not a Republican or a Trump issue, but the media should be fair and should be a check on the government that's in power. President Kennedy, I think it was sometime in 1961, had a big speech about how important it is that the media questions the government that's in power. Now, if you say anything against the administration or the power brokers or whatever, not only can't you say it, but now the Justice Department wants to persecute you. And it's gotten crazy. I mean, one of the symbols of the Democratic Party used to be free speech and be able to march in the streets. And now people are afraid to even mention anything that's anti-government.
I mean, go ahead.
Can't even get people to put signs on their lawns now saying who they support, because there's a fear out there. And you see regular journalists who are trying to give another point of view, and the Justice Department's coming down on them, and it's crazy. I mean, I just don't know what America I'm living in anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very confusing, right? And you get this mixed messaging from everywhere all the time. And it's a challenge to get your head around it, quite frankly. And it's frustrating. And you see that frustration playing itself out in this country each and every day. And this boiling point, we're getting really, really close to that tipping point. And when you have a former president where there are two attempts in a very short period of time, and I misspoke actually yesterday, there was and I totally forgot about the situation with Gerald Ford, but you don't see that very often. Here we are again, and you wonder why we just can't leave people alone, plain and simple. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So on a text line, Newell, I may have missed it. Could you please tell listeners the highlights of the Republican presidential plan of Project 2025? Thanks. Well, first off, you've misstated the fact. Donald Trump has separated himself from Project 2025. I read about two-thirds of it in a meaningful way of the Project 2025 plan. There's a lot in there I don't like, I don't agree with. There's a lot in there I do like, quite frankly, and I think makes sense in governance and makes sense in operating and managing a company otherwise known as the federal government. Just things that actually make sense that are utilized in the private sector, and we would become more effective and more efficient if we adopted some of the plans. Some of it has been overly stated. Some of it has been misquoted and, continue to try and, tattoo President Trump with Project 2025. There are over 400 contributing authors to that plan, some of which actually served in President Trump's administration. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that individual's ideology is President Trump's ideology. I mean, I kind of take a more commonsensical approach to these things. So for those of you that are married out there, you will probably identify with what I'm saying. My wife has a belief about certain things that I don't share. We're not together on some of these issues. Sometimes she's more aggressive on an issue than I am. I have a more central, in the middle kind of point of view on certain issues. So I don't know how we really are getting to this point. It's funny, Kamala Harris can say that she hasn't lost her values. She's just changed her positions on policies, and everybody are really willing to accept her explanation on that. And then Trump, on the other hand, says, I have nothing to do with Project 2025. I hadn't even read it. Yeah, there are people that were in my administration that are opining about certain things, maybe some of the same opinions that they gave when I served the first time and I didn't implement any of that stuff that they're opining in the Project 2025 plan that was published actually by the Heritage Foundation. So how does that work? I mean, if we want to embrace the lies of individuals as it relates to Project 2025, yes. Is it a 400 conservative contributors? Absolutely. That is the truth. Does it mean that someone has actually embraced all the points of that plan? No. In fact, he's publicly taken positions contrary to that plan. And I don't need to defend him, but I mean, I'm so sick and tired of people trying to tattoo someone that they don't even know what they're talking about. And they don't understand the whole genesis of the Project 2025 and what was put forward. And you can go in left-leaning think tanks and find some of the same types of approaches to identifying a liberal plan or a progressive plan. Why are we not tattooing Kamala Harris with those as well? Just an observation. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So on a text line, Newell, I may have missed it. Could you please tell listeners the highlights of the Republican presidential plan of Project 2025? Thanks. Well, first off, you've misstated the fact. Donald Trump has separated himself from Project 2025. I read about two-thirds of it in a meaningful way of the Project 2025 plan. There's a lot in there I don't like, I don't agree with. There's a lot in there I do like, quite frankly, and I think makes sense in governance and makes sense in operating and managing a company otherwise known as the federal government. Just things that actually make sense that are utilized in the private sector, and we would become more effective and more efficient if we adopted some of the plans. Some of it has been overly stated. Some of it has been misquoted and, you know, continue to try and, I guess, tattoo President Trump with Project 2025. There are over 400 contributing authors to that plan, some of which actually served in President Trump's administration. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that individual's ideology is President Trump's ideology. I mean, I kind of take a more commonsensical approach to these things. So for those of you that are married out there, you will probably identify with what I'm saying. My wife has a belief about certain things that I don't share. We're not together on some of these issues. Sometimes she's more aggressive on an issue than I am. I have a more central, you know, in the middle kind of point of view on certain issues. So I don't know how we really are getting to this point. It's funny, Kamala Harris can say that she hasn't lost her values. She's just changed her positions on policies, and everybody are really willing to accept her explanation on that. And then Trump, on the other hand, says, I have nothing to do with Project 2025. I hadn't even read it. Yeah, there are people that were in my administration that are opining about certain things, maybe some of the same opinions that they gave when I served the first time, and I didn't implement any of that stuff that they're opining in the Project 2025 plan that was published actually by the Heritage Foundation. So how does that work? I mean, if we want to embrace the lies of individuals as it relates to Project 2025, yes, is it a 400 conservative contributors? Absolutely. That is the truth. Does it mean that someone has actually embraced all the points of that plan? No. In fact, he's publicly taken positions contrary to that plan. And I don't need to defend him, but I mean, you know, I'm so sick and tired of people trying to tattoo someone that they don't even know what they're talking about. And they don't understand the whole genesis of the Project 2025 and what was put forward. And you can go and left-leaning think tanks and find some of the same types of approaches to identifying a liberal plan or a progressive plan. Why are we not tattooing Kamala Harris with those as well? Just an observation. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.